Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
I'm Steve, and this is Allie. You guys all know who we are, but welcome to the podcast. You know, I woke up this morning, Allie, and I had a tea time booked for Saturday in hopes that we'd finally be done with Snowmageddon. And I got up this morning because I saw that it was going to be 56 on Saturday. So I thought, well, whatever remaining snow was going to be left, I'm going to get the opportunity to go play golf because it's going to warm up. But every time I log into my weather app, that snowflake shows up.
Every time.
I don't know what to do. I mean, it's like I'm going to have to cancel another tea time.
But we do live in Utah, so if it's like yesterday, you could do a 3 o'clock tea time and it's like summer.
Yeah, I don't know that that's going to be the case. I mean, it's I feel really sorry for the wildlife. I don't know if you saw that they've had the amounts of elk on the Salt Lake Country Club. Did you see that?
I missed that.
You missed it?
Yes.
Oh, I have a video I have to show
okay.
you. There was
Brady
Bear took a picture of it, and it was just a fairway covered in elk.
Oh, wow.
And so the...
They're starving.
Yeah. The DFR actually closed down the road, and I don't know exactly how they moved the animals, but they moved them back up to the hillside. So they used all those resources, shut everything down. Well, I think it was a day or two later, they had all migrated back onto the course. So we don't have the privilege of having any elk. There was a moose sighting, a couple of mountain lions in the neighborhood. I have not seen any. I've seen a coyote. But this morning I woke up and my wife is frantic. And she's getting dressed and ready. And I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, I got to go feed the deer.
That would be me, for sure.
And I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, there's a baby pacing in front of our gate.
Oh.
So I'm like, all right. And so she's like, I could hear her yelling from the downstairs. And she's like, can you come down here a second? And I'm like, yes. And she's loading up this dry bag full of pellets of deer food that she buys at IFA. And she goes, Tanner, our son, said that alfalfa is bad for the deer. That it can hurt him. And I said, no, that's not true. And he said, well, on Yellowstone, one of the last episodes, those animals were dying, and that's because of the alfalfa, which is, again, false. So I educated her on that sickness that goes within the cattle. Had to go back to my old roots. And
we've seen you in the chaps, we know.
Yeah, so I assured her that the pellets she's been feeding now for 2 years are good, and we've had zero deaths in the deer population in our backyard.
How many adopted deer do you have that hang out at your house now?
Well, it started out with a handful, but I think they speak to one another. I don't know quite how they do that yet. I haven't heard any verbal conversations, but sometimes we have up to 100.
So really, every animal on the golf course is there because they know me nearby.
They bring their friends.
Yep.
And what I do notice, what I can confirm, is that my credit card charges at IFA have tripled in the last year. So I don't know what that looks like, but I think they're being fed well.
Are you? Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, Mimi. I feel good about that, but yeah. I do know when the snow melts, that golf course is going to have some issues.
Potentially, yes.
We
actually, when we first moved into our home, I went down to the feed store and I bought a feeder for the deer. Because I thought it'd be cool to bring the wildlife in. Well, that probably promoted a lot more activity. And I was somewhere, and the phone rang, and it said Hidden Valley. So I picked it up, and it was the general manager.
Quit feeding the deer.
And he's like, hey, Steve, we have a problem. And I knew immediately where he was going, right? And I'm like, well, what's the problem? He goes, I need to address your feeder that you have. There's a lot of the members are complaining about deer poop on the golf tee, and you're going to have to move it. So.
Well, there you have it.
The deer feeder has since been retired.
That's smart. Well, yeah. Now it's named Mimi.
Yeah, yeah, so it's in person.
It's now in person.
Yeah, it's in person. And she has names for all of them. And like Big Ears is her favorite.
How cute.
And Big Ears sometimes will come out to the front if she hadn't fed him in a couple days. And literally, I will open the bathroom window, and that deer head will be just staring at me.
Oh, my goodness.
And she wants to be fed. So it's crazy.
Friends for life right there.
Anyway, I'm sure we could talk about the deer and elk
and golfing,
wildlife and golf and the painful snow that just keeps coming and the snow globe we're living in, but we need the water. I just selfishly want to play golf and get a suntan or something.
Well, that is coming. And a good friend of mine who's actually here today, and we'll get into that in a second, did say after every big winter, what happens? What comes?
Spring.
Spring always comes.
Spring comes.
So we're going to talk about a big winter here that happened in a dear friend of mine, two dear friends of mine that are, I just love them to death, in their lives. And this is not meant to be a sad or any type of a down podcast. This is actually super inspiring. And I have two heroes sitting here with us today. And I may get a little emotional because normally when we have people come on, we get to hear about how they made it through a trial or through the winter. And these two so graciously joined us today. And they're actually in the thick of winter, like we are, like we talked about. And I think it's really important that, you know, we remember that everybody behind every door, there's a problem, there's a heart that people are going through. And every heart is different and none should be minimized. But today we're going to talk to my friends about their hard and kind of the steps that they're taking to get through this hard. And, you know, someone once told me that, you know, everybody has their challenges. And if you throw them all in a pile, whether you hate your challenge or not, you're going to pick your own to take back. I mean, our challenges are meant for us individually. We can get through them, but then there's some challenges that come that you would rather not take back, and you don't have any control of that, but you still have to deal with it. You still have to put one foot in front of the other, literally, and figure out how to work through that and see who you become on the other side.
And I think when we started this podcast, Something to Believe In, was our commitment to you was to and to us was to give you something to believe in, right? And it wasn't about the bad. Even though there is bad sometimes, it's how you overcome that and what you do moving forward, which equals the good. And, you know, in knowing their story of your guests today, it kind of makes that snow on the mountain to tea green seem irrelevant, right?
Absolutely.
And we get caught up in, sometimes we get caught up in our own selfish things that we deem as hard that aren't really hard. We just choose to make them hard.
Yeah.
And we sometimes don't see the bigger picture with life isn't always easy. And it's going to throw curveballs at you. And it's going to, you're going to face challenges.
Yeah.
And it's what you do with those challenges that really define you as the person. Right?
For sure. And when you're in the challenge, it's really hard to say it's not what happens to us, it's what happens for us. When you're
yes.
in the challenge, you're like, whatever, that is not real, but you still have to deal with it. You still have to figure out a way to grow from it and be better for it. And doesn't mean you're not going to be really mad and angry and have those negative emotions, but at a certain point, you can't live in that emotion. You have to move forward. And I have two examples here. Would love to introduce you to.
Oh, yes.
This is Daniel and Jerry Lynn Pace. And we are going to have them on camera here if they're not already.
They're on camera.
There we go.
Yeah.
And they're more fun to look at than Steve and I. But these are dear friends of mine. And I'm going to have them share with you what they experienced on December 27th of this year. And then after they share their stories, we have a few questions for them. And I know that you will find their story tragic yet inspiring and motivating, and also just give perspective on where we all are in life right now. So I don't know which one of you wants to share the story. Daniel, why don't you share the story?
I'll start. First off, thanks for having us. You know, I never thought I'd be interesting enough to be on anything like this. So I guess you gotta go through something to get on a podcast sometimes. But no, it was a couple days after to Christmas. We all this snow has been wonderful, and so we said, you know, hey, let's get up into the mountains, and we were fortunate enough to have access to some snowmobiles, And so we said, you know, let's drive up the canyon. Let's get up past Strawberry, where we have some property out there that Jalen's family has, and we'll go snowmobiling. And so we loaded up the car with the kids. We had four kids. We loaded it up. We got all our snow gear in the car, and we headed up the canyon. You know, we got up past Tiber, went heading towards Strawberry, and it just started to snow. Just barely it started to snow, where you could start to see just a little bit on the road. And the cars were just, you know, starting to modify your driving just enough. You know, it wasn't a crazy blizzard or anything, but it was starting to get going. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, hats off to my wife as we're starting to go up towards Strawberry, and we're going up that big Daniel Summit. And, you know, my wife looks back and makes sure all the kids have their seatbelts on. I don't know, she was prompted to do that. And, you know, made sure they're all, you know, safe in their seats, the car seat and all that stuff. And, you know, they're playing games, totally unaware of what's going on. But we all had our seatbelts on, and we're heading through the up the canyon. We come back down the other side, and there's this nice long bend right as you get towards the lake. And I just remember as we start that long bend, me and my wife were talking about something, and I just look out of the corner of my eye, and something doesn't seem right. And I see a car heading straight towards me, and I knew something was off. And you only have about a second in this moment that the wheels were turned the wrong way, and obviously it was sliding. And we're going highway speeds, and you know, I didn't have much time to react. I think my wife started to scream. I tried to hit the brakes and turn the wheel or do something, but there was just no time to do anything. And we were hit head on, pretty much, and. So, you know, I'll turn some time over to my wife at this point, because I was knocked out. And, you know, when I come to, I do remember my wife running around the car trying to make sure of all the kids. And just my first thought was, you know, I got to get out of this car. I got to start helping. You know, clearly this is a pretty big accident.
Right.
I want to make sure my kids, my wife are okay. And, you know, I go to try and move, and my legs don't work. And, it's a tough feeling when you're sitting there and you realize your legs just aren't moving. Your brain's sending that signal that it's sent hundreds of thousands of times in your life, and it's just not working. And that's tough. And so you start panicking a little bit, and we were really lucky. There were people who stopped to help us. You know, I just remember, you know, it took a long time for emergency people to get there because of the snow and the traffic. But there were some really nice people who helped just hold me in the car until they could get there and cut me out and get me on into an ambulance. But I probably missed a few things. So if you want to fill in some gaps.
When after we got hit, I looked back and I saw all my kids were crying and screaming, which is a good sign. That's the best kind of sign you can have in those kind of accidents.
Absolutely.
It took Daniel a little bit before he made any noise, but he made noise and I knew he was alive. He's okay. So I get out of the car and I look at the go to the other driver, and there's a bystander that had come up to me and said, "There's nothing we can do. Don't try to help this person. You know, they're gone."
Oh.
And so at that moment, I knew I just had to focus on my family. Daniel's door was pushed in, and he couldn't get out. His door we couldn't open him. But Daniel was trying to scream to get out. And the two men that were trying to help him, hold him up, kind of were like, "What do you want us to do? Do you want us to get him out?" And I said, "He says it's his back. We can't touch him." And those two men nearly held him up for 40 minutes, which was cold. It was snowing. It was, that alone was one of our heroes that helped us that day. And then addressing my kids, I knew they were all hurt, but I knew they were all, like, I could sense that they were okay. There was, Ryder, my youngest is 4 years old, and she was mad, but she was not injured, which is a miracle. The three boys that we have, they were injured. My son, I thought he had broke his nose, but he ended up having an orbital fracture and concussion. And my other son, Landon, was complaining. I was trying to get him to move to a different car. Our car started smelling like gasoline, so we wanted to get him out because we were worried they might be getting asphyxiated. And so we tried to move him, but when I tried to move Landon, he went straight to the ground, said he couldn't feel his legs. And I said, yes, you can feel your legs. And he just laid on the ground for a little bit. And I said, this isn't safe. We cannot lay on the ground. So eventually we got him to another bystander's car. And him and Landon and Easton and my other daughter, Paige, went to a different car with another amazing people that were helping us. Once the ambulance finally got there, they kind of divided us up. There was three ambulances. There's Daniel. Daniel went, had his own. And then Easton and Ryder. So my 10, 11-year-old and 8-year-old went in a different one. And they were going to Utah Valley. Me and my other son, Easton and Paige, they decided to go to Heber Valley. And so I was just begging them. I said, can we all just go to the same hospital?
Yeah,
I don't want to have kids all over the valley. So they said, no, this is going to be the best. This will be the best thing for your family. So at that point, they took Daniel and my two boys to Utah Valley, and me and Easton went to Heber Valley. I knew I had a broken arm, but was still, you know, able to help and do what I needed to do with the kids. But once we got Easton there at Heber Valley, they decided his injuries were more substantial and that he needed to be transferred to Primary Children's. And soon after that, they had told me that Daniel, they had got him in at Utah Valley and decided that he needed to be transferred as well. So he went to IMC here in Murray. So at that point, we kind of knew things were serious because, you know, sometimes you like to say, it's okay, we're all going to be okay. And we are all okay. But at that point, we knew, you know, we needed a level 1 trauma center for Dan, and that was serious. Part of the challenges that we had was now my family was all over the state, and you didn't know what family member to go to.
Not a good feeling for a mother.
Yeah, like, where do you go?
Yeah.
How do you go? But luckily we have family, and I promised my kids they wouldn't be alone, and each of them had one of my siblings, one of their aunts, be able to stay with them, so no one was alone, which was, it's a pretty big deal for me that they weren't alone. But Daniel spent some time alone because I thought, okay, he's the adult. He's gotta do this okay, or he's gonna be okay. But as we found out what the kids' injuries were, my son Easton had a broken sternum. He broke his back in 3 places. He broke his collarbone and his wrist, but was stable. There was no bleeding or external bleeding or anything, or internal bleeding, which was awesome. Landon had a broken leg, his tibia and fibia, and then his shoulder, his humerus, tried to come out. So he has spent he spent 8 weeks in a wheelchair because with his injuries, he couldn't be weight-bearing or move. And so he spent 8 weeks in a wheelchair, and then he was able to put some weight on his foot. And then my cute little boy, Ryder, he had an orbital fracture, but he's done really well and recovered really well. But with Daniel, it took a long time for the doctors to decide what to do because of the nature of his fracture. It's very unique. His L5 was broken, and his sacral portion of his pelvis was shattered. And usually, with spinal injuries, they're usually higher up and not in the sacral region. So they didn't know how to stabilize his pelvis and reconnect his spine because it was basically dislocated. And so it was a snowy day at that point. It was snowing more, and there was more and more more traumatic life or death
patients
in there. And so they kept putting Dan and Dan off. So he didn't get into his surgery for what felt like forever, but it was 3 days later before they had to stabilize his pelvis And then the neurosurgeon could go in and stabilize his spine. So at that point, no doctors were giving us any information. They just don't really want to say anything. They don't know the level of his injury or what he can feel. He could feel, we knew he could feel a little bit, just not a lot in his legs. And so...
It's a tough thing, I think, for doctors, because everyone is different, and when it comes to spinal cord injuries, the results or the how you come out of it and what you're able to do out of it is very different for every person, and the human body is amazing, and but you know, it's so different, and so they didn't, you know, give us any indication of like how, what am I going to be like, or I knew coming out of the surgeries, the two different surgeries they put. So the first surgery, they had to stabilize my sacrum and make sure my spine was stable. And they put two huge bolts through my pelvis to hold it all in place. And that was the orthopedic surgeon's job. And then the neurosurgeon came in and built like a little ladder, it looks like, of like these little 2-inch screws all up to my L4. And so once that was all done, you know, now it's kind of, my neurosurgeon was amazing, and he's well known, and he's a great neurosurgeon, but I remember him coming in the next day or a day or two, it was the next day or so, and looking, he rips off the band-aid, looks at the wound, says, "Looks good, now you need to start walking." And I said, "Okay, how's that gonna happen?"
Right.
And it's just you know, you get a whole new appreciation for people in the medical field when you go through something like this. The nurses, the doctors, the physical therapists, occupational therapists. But I remember the next day, they tried to roll me up, sit me up in bed, and I am screaming in agony and pain. And they're like, "You're going to stand up." And I said, "How in the world is that going to happen?" You know, but they push you, and they push you, and it's really good. Because a couple days later, I was able to start taking some of those first steps with a walker to try and get my legs going again. So, It's an experience that as you're going through it, you're just like, how is this going to happen? How am I going to do this? But, it's just a cliche, but it's like one foot in front of the other. It's one. I had somebody say this to me, and I think it really kind of epitomizes the whole situation is, you know, they ask you the question, how do you eat an elephant? And the answer is one bite at a time. One bite at a time. And so... for us, over the last 3 months, it's been basically one day at a time, one doctor visit, one physical therapist session, one step at a time.
So, you know, going through this, I have to go back to the day that this happened. And, you know, I kind of titled this podcast to Unleash Your Hero. That hero oftentimes can be the people that were there for your family. You know, but I have watched you two go through this. And the day that it happened, we immediately got a text right after the accident from Jerry Lynn to just say to pray for her family. And, you know, Jerry Lynn's someone that does everything for herself and for everyone else and isn't one to normally ask for help for anything. And part of being able to help yourself and your family is to be able to ask for help, to accept help. And in a situation like this, really, you were given no choice. You had to rely on family and everybody, but you had a tender mercy in that you, as the mother, could actually leave the hospital. You had not one broken wrist, but find out you have two broken arms after the fact. And to be able to be all hands on deck, but honestly, this, for 3 or 4 days, I don't think Jerry Lynn slept, and we were worried that she wasn't eating or sleeping, but we're like, this is just how it has to be. And how you were in that moment of taking care of your family and being able to be in, you were in all places at once. I really do believe that you were. And then to be there for Daniel, and but to be able to ask for help. So what do you feel like you learned about yourself in those moments, both of you, and that, you know, maybe you were surprised, or maybe you were grateful for, or maybe, you know, wish wouldn't have been a part of who you were?
That's a tough question, Allie. Wow. I mean, don't run off our guests.
I think in that time of crisis, and I had these thoughts like, I have to make all these decisions. They're all mine to make, and I want to give this to somebody else. And I knew it was my responsibility to make these, you know, some of these decisions, what needed to happen for my family. And I think and this applies probably in any hard situation. You gather the facts, you do as much research as you can. You have to do it pretty quick, and then you have to move forward. You make that decision, and you hope and pray and that your research or your minimal knowledge of the medical field is enough. And then you have a hope and a prayer that it's all going to work out. Then you put your shoulder to the wheel and be there for your people, you know. That's important.
I have so many questions, but it's like, I can't believe it was December 27th and you're here. By the grace of God, everybody's alive in your family. I mean,
and we're very lucky.
What a blessing that is, yeah. First and foremost. Can I address the emotions that maybe you've gone through? What that looks like? I'm thinking of me. I know that road very well because I go fishing there all the time. So when you're describing the road, I'm picturing the many, many trips back and forth I've done mm-hmm. up and down that highway.
Yeah.
What's that like? I mean, have you ever been at a point where like, why me? Why my family? Why did this happen to me?
Yeah.
Anger, hope.
It's, you know, Stevie, it's I say that those, the why me, the five letters, the two words that you just have to throw out, like you just got to push them away, because I think it takes you down a road that is, it's really dark,
yeah.
and it's unhelpful. But it's a human nature to want to say that, right?
Absolutely.
You know, I think I've been fortunate that I've really tried not to go down that road. I had a therapist, and you know, you think that you're going through one of the hardest things, and then you go to a physical therapy place where there's some people going through tremendous, tremendous difficulties. You know, I have my challenges, but I look around a room and there's people who are quadriplegic. There's people who have just way, way more challenges than I do. So it really helps put it in perspective. But I was talking to one of my physical therapists, and I've come to find out she's gone through some really tough trials. She lost a spouse. And to me, that's even more challenging than what I'm going through. And she's like, well, people ask you, like, how do you do it? And she's like, my answer is always, what else am I going to do? And it's an interesting perspective to say that, right? Because we have two choices every single morning. We can just lay in bed and not get up. That's a choice. That's a choice we have to make. We could just lay there, or we can get up and put one foot in front of the other. And so what we do with that choice every day will define our whole life going forward. And so, I mean, it's not easy. I don't pretend that I'm the best at it myself, but I just try to make that choice to get out of bed and just put one foot in front of the other and just go from there.
How has this team developed with you two?
And, yeah, that's a great thing.
And I mean, I know you away from this, and I know, you know, your personalities, but I have been really impressed with, you know, I know you have a drill sergeant sitting next to you, but and wants to fix things, but your response to all of it. I mean, this morning, what did you do before you came here?
I went to a hyperbaric oxygen therapy chamber, so.
Yeah, I mean, doing everything possible. But yeah, tell us about this teamwork and how that's meant for both of you. What it has meant for both of you.
I mean, you learn to, you know, in a marriage it's always a team effort. But you really realize how much of a team effort it is when you go through something like this. You know, my wife's been awesome. She's been like, you know, you have to have tremendous patience. With someone like me, where they're trying to, I mean, I am slow. It takes me forever to do anything. But not only that, you know, she's helpful, patient, and kind. And these are things that you develop, I think, and are exponentially grow in this type of situation. It's like it fast tracks it all. And so, I mean, her ability to be patient with the kids, with me, and it's just been awesome.
I don't think there's a greater way you can show someone you love them by serving them. And when you do that, when you are thinking about somebody else or helping somebody else, and you forget about yourself, that's where, you know, the connection happens, and you can really feel the love is when you just, and any time in our marriage, I would have said that, but it's different when you're, you know, when the rubber hits the road and you say, okay, day in and day out, I'm going to do whatever it takes to let you know how much I love you, to let you know how much we're so glad you're here and how valuable you are. No matter what you're doing, you are valuable in our family. So
you touched on a really, really good point that really struck a nerve there, is that when you stop thinking about yourself and focusing on others, the satisfaction and the good you feel. And I think as a society in life, not to get too deep, we get so caught up in our own ways. And I've seen it the last few years more and more, where we get, and I'm guilty of it, right? Woe is me. I'm caught up in me. I'm doing my thing. And when you stop and realize that, you become miserable, actually. You naturally become miserable because it's a selfish trait. But then when you stop and say, what can I do for others? Whether it's a spouse, a coworker, a friend, a colleague, whatever, it's amazing how things kind of turn around and how you start to naturally feel better. And things just kind of work out, right? They just, you see things differently.
And being on the other side of it, where you accept the help as well, where, you know, you take some humbleness and to say, you know, I want to do it, but I'm gonna let her show me that she loves me by doing some of these things. It's a huge thing.
And that's tough, because I'm thinking as a guy, right? Yeah. It's like a guy thing. It's like, I can do this. I don't need it. It's a pride thing, right? It's like we are ingrained to be like the man, and it's hard. I mean, I can't even imagine the emotion of what that must have been like to go through, to have to dial it down and say, I need some help.
Yeah, it's tough, but you learn humility fast. And and I think to touch back on that, the whole like how to get out of the why me, go help other people, focus on other people, and you really quickly get rid of that whole darkness and the why me thing. Something that someone early on, and we kind of came up with this thing, which is we came up with like a gratitude journal. And early on, we started just writing down things that we're grateful for every day before we go to sleep.
We meaning you and your children, right?
Everybody was doing it. Yeah, we got the kids doing it. You know, this is something my wife was really big on, and I start doing it, and it really helped get out of that, like, that cycle of why me, the anger and all that stuff, because you can really, even in the hardest situations, you can find things that you can be grateful for, no matter how small they are. And so, just touching back on that, I think it's important to look outside yourself, and as you do that, you get out of those bad cycles.
I do think, you know, I remember going up to the hospitals the second day, Jerry Lynn was standing outside your door, Daniel, and she just said, you know, she was just saying how, you know, you were her hero, and she was just, you took that hit for the family. You saw it, you turned it, you tried to take that hit for the family. Consciously, subconsciously, you were protecting your family, and immediately, you know, there was a respect that had always been there, but grown even more from Jerry Lynn toward you. But I think when you go through these things, just as we talked about, it's okay to experience all the emotions, and it's important to experience all the emotions and not feel like you have to push any of them away or down or be ashamed of any of them. But what I love about and is so inspiring about your story is that you're right. You have a choice every day to stay in bed or to get up. You have a choice to focus on you or to focus outward. Anytime I'm talking to them and asking them how they're doing, I never walk away without them really genuinely asking how I'm doing as well. And they mean that. And I think such a great example for all of us that, you know, to step outside of ourselves is so incredibly important in that service to others, in being aware of others, in having our eyes up and seeing that everybody's going through a different hard, and we're all in our own trial. But the example you guys have been through this is incredible. And, you know, moving forward in this journey, I keep telling Jerry Lynn, I have seen a change in her that's really good. And parts of her would be like, I'm great. I just want my old life back, you know, but I see this change in her that is incredible, but it's very empathetic. It's very sweet and kind. It taps into a part of her, but I think allowing these trials to change us for good is really important. And I see that in them, and they don't always do that for people. You know, I think a lot of times we make the everyday trials in our life much bigger than they need to be.
Yeah, I agree.
And how often would they just be like, we'll take our old heart back, no problem. But yet, as they progress forward and become and shape and mold into these people through the trial, I don't think they change who they've become for anything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, using...
I think, too, is not taking anything for granted, right? Because you never know. I'm sure the thought of, well, if I'd have left a minute later, or if I would have done this differently, or if... I can only imagine all the things that are going through your head, and it's like... You never know, right? You never know when life's going to throw adversity your way, and how you deal with it, that's a whole different topic, right?
For sure.
That's why the little things, and I'm sure you could echo this, why sweat the little things? I mean,
they become a lot littler after something like this too, you know?
Yeah, because this is something you're going to live with the rest of your life, right? You're going to have these questions. You're going to have these adversities. You're going to have challenges, right? And that's hard.
Yeah.
If you haven't, spoiler alert, you will have a challenge very soon.
Right?
It's true. And how are you preparing, and can you even prepare?
It's not if, it's when.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, a question for you guys just to kind of wrap it up. And you might not know exactly how to answer this, and that's fine. It's just, you know, you never feel like you're in a position to give advice or insight, but what would you guys say is something that, whether you're going to continue to strive to fill and work on moving forward, or just encourage other people to do as you've experienced this, that's really been a blessing or a strength in this process for you? What do you feel like is something important to share that has been powerful for you?
That's a great question.
If anything, I've learned, like, you are your own best advocate, whether in your job or your family or in a medical issue. Like, you are responsible of doing your research, of making the best decisions you can, and asking for help. There are so many amazing people that have so much more knowledge than us that can help us. And so asking for help is such an awesome way to help yourself. And more often than not, everyone's willing to help you in these. So I feel like, you know, through what I, even what I've learned the last few months, I feel like I could go, you know, ask anyone, you know, anything if I needed help, you know, in a career move or whatever it is, that if you need help or you're struggling mentally, socially, with work, there's resources for us.
Yeah, but we're afraid to raise our hands.
And we are afraid, and you know what? We don't want to sometimes put the effort in.
Burden
but every time we put that effort in, it's always rewarded. So, love that. I agree.
I would just go back to the one bite at a time. It's easy when you go through a situation like this. Like, I remember being in the hospital and being like, I'm going to walk out of here. Like, I'm 100% going to walk out of here. And, you know, that wasn't necessarily in the cards, per se, in the way my mind wanted to do it. But so I had to just kind of shift and say, let's just take one step at a time. I'm going to get to a walker. I'm going to go this far down the hallway. Next time I'm going to go a little farther down the hallway. And then, you know, this time I'm going to walk a half lap, you know, one bite at a time, one step at a time. Don't get overwhelmed by the big thing. Break it down into small chunks that you can swallow, and you'll get to that. You'll finish out in the end.
Well, I think the best insight and advice comes from people who are actually going through it. And we appreciate so much your willingness to be here. And the people that you are.
I got to say this, because, man, the light went on for me today. And it wouldn't be a podcast if something didn't go wrong. Huh, Cody?
That's right.
Something always goes wrong. But we always get through it. Well, this morning, the elevator in the building did not work. So I'm in looking at the itinerary, right? And Allie comes in, and she's pretty calm, but she had a frantic look in her eye. And she goes, I can't get the elevator to work. I don't know how he's going to get up here. And so I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm not a elevator repairman. I know nothing about elevators, but I know how to maybe trick that button. So I'm trying everything I can, holding it, jamming it. Maybe it's a short. It doesn't work. Allie goes, they're here. And I'm like, do you, I'm uncomfortable, right? I don't know what to do. Do I go up and say, hey, do you want help up the stairs? Can I carry you up the stairs? I lean over, you're downstairs, both of you are coming in. I said, can I give you some help up the stairs? He said, no, I got this. And I literally watched you, even keel as possible, not even breaking a concern, somehow get up both flights of stairs. And it didn't even faze you. For what it's worth, it did something for me, big stripes for you. It shows exactly who you are. You're a fighter. And I just mad props, man. Mad props.
And something I learned from this is everybody can be a fighter, too. It's a choice. So, I mean, I think there's nothing special about me other than I'm just going to keep trying, you know? And I think everybody can do that in their own way.
Well, thank you both for coming. God bless both of you and your family. I know you got a lot to go on, and prayers up, and hang in there, man.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks.
Hang in there. So I know we went a little longer. This was a great, great podcast. Thank you so much for coming in. Thank you, Allie. It made my somewhat snowy day better. I think your story is fantastic, and good luck on everything. But we want to tell everybody thank you. Next year, Allie reminded me it's our 1-year anniversary and something to believe in, so we might have to have a cake and a party hat. I don't know what we're going to do yet, but we want to thank you for participating. And as always, if there's something you want to discuss or something that you feel that's important to you, you can email us at podcast@intercaplending.com. We would love to have your input. Unfortunately, we've had zero input in that arena yet. But
either you're totally happy crossed, or you're not watching. One of the two.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it could be a combination of both. So have a great month, and we'll see you next month.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, everybody.